Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing, available 24/7 at ianmasters.com. And joining us now is Lawrence Douglas, who's a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College. His most recent book is The Right Wrong Man, John Demjanjuk and the Last Great Nazi War Crime Trial. And he is a regular columnist for The Guardian. Welcome to Background Briefing, Lawrence Douglas.
Glad to be with you again.
Well, thank you, Lawrence. And what do you make of this latest headline today in terms of the president body shaming the anchor of a cable news show? Previously, he was very friendly with this couple, Scarborough and Mika Brzezinski, and even if, offered to officiate at their wedding. But now he's resorting to really kind of petty, nasty terms. What does this mean in terms of the presidency when you've got at least two senators, Lindsey Graham and Ben Sasse, tweeting out their disapproval? But in general, what's your sense of how this is playing in this extremely divided and polarized country?
Well, I mean, what's remarkable, of course, is that he does have his defenders. I mean, he has people like Sean Hannity, who basically, I suppose, will defend no matter what Trump does. But, you know, Hannity comes racing in saying that, well, maybe Joe Scarborough should stop calling the president the liar, as if that justifies the response on the president's part. It's obviously something that is not new. I mean, we saw him engaging in these kinds of ad hominem, personal, you know, highly personal attacks all through the campaign season and since the election as well. So there's certainly nothing new about it. I think it does, you know, I think we can say for the umpteenth time that this man is not fit for office, and his unfitness is demonstrated both in terms of what he does and what he says. And for those who think that, oh, well, this is just kind of like a trivial act of not engaging in dignified discourse, you know, I think dignity and democracy kind of go hand in hand. I mean, I think one of the basic assumptions of democratic life is that people in a democracy are going to disagree with one another. And the only way for democracy to work is if we treat those with whom we disagree with respect. And he simply fails to do that. He simply fails to act in a dignified fashion. He treats other people without respect. He engages in behavior that demonstrates a complete absence of self-control. And to that extent, he doesn't earn honor or respect as president. So there is this kind of sadly familiar, but incredibly dispiriting degradation of discourse.
But unfortunately, as far as I can tell, we do have a situation akin to what happened to the United States before the Revolution, where the head of state, King George, was quite mad and would wander around his vast palaces talking to the trees. And his courtiers would spend all of their time at letting the outside world know that everything was going swimmingly and ignoring the antics of the lunatic king. And to some extent, it seems that that's happening in the White House, where, you know, you've got the press people basically having to say the most absurd stuff on a daily basis, defend the indefensible. Well, the very first day that Sean Spicer was on the job, he had to tell the press that the crowd at the inauguration was bigger than it was at Obama's inauguration. And there he is showing pictures where it was manifestly clear that one had millions of people and the other one had a pretty thin crowd. That was day one. My sense is that the country itself, as long as it participates in denial and normalizes the situation, they're complicit in this kind of madness.
Well, yeah. I mean, I suppose I have two possible responses to that, Ian. One is the question about Trump himself. And again, you know, I don't enjoy engaging in kind of psychoanalyzing this man. My own view is that he is not unhinged. I think that, you know, one thing that's kind of remarkable about him is that he's never had to pay a political price for both his lying and for his insulting. And in fact, you know, throughout the election season, people said, well, there's no way that someone can get elected engaging in this kind of nonstop lying and verbal abuse of his opponents. And he proved them wrong. And so on some level, until the time that he is forced to pay a clear political price for his insulting and for his lying, I'm prepared to believe that he thinks that he is a kind of a political wizard and that he is defying everybody's understandings of what can be done as President of the United States. I think you're absolutely right that he wouldn't be able to do this without these aiders and abettors. And some of these aiders and abettors are people, as I mentioned, like Sean Hannity. And then the other aiders and abettors are those in the Republican Party who only, with the greatest reluctance and most tepidly, engage in any kind of criticism of his outrageous behavior.
And again, I'm speaking with Lawrence Douglas. He's a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College. His most recent book is The Right Wrong Man, John Demjanjuk and the Last Great Nazi War Crimes Trial. And he's a regular columnist for The Guardian. So again, though, what does it say about America and our polity and where we've descended, if you will? And I suspect that in many ways, John McCain's choice of Sarah Palin as his running mate kind of broke a tradition, if you will, in American politics. It seemed to me that it was always understood that you tried to find talented and experienced political leaders and that people would vote for people who were essentially more qualified than they were. Sarah Palin broke that mold and gave permission to people to vote for somebody that's just like them. You know, in other words, you might as well vote for the person at the supermarket who's checking you out as much as you are to some, you know, experienced person. For example, you had nobody more experienced in terms of governance than Hillary Clinton. And she lost to a guy that insulted everybody and had no political experience was extremely uncouth and has a record of unbridled selfishness, if not corruption.
Yes, no, that's absolutely right. And, you know, I think I agree with you completely about the, you know, not simply that Sarah Palin was a miserable choice, but that Sarah Palin represented a very disturbing absence of judgment on John McCain's part. In as much as she was manifestly unsuited even for, you know, the relatively ceremonial position of vice presidency, which, of course, is just a single heartbeat away from the position of president of the United States. And I do think that, you know, the degradation of political discourse in this country certainly predates the advent of Donald Trump. That said, I think Donald Trump has nonetheless, you know, taken whatever degradation there already was on the ground, and he has just gone with it. And he has kind of smashed through one guardrail of decency, one guardrail of probity, one guardrail of honesty, just one after another after another. So I don't think he's simply the manifestation of a problem. I think in many ways he is that problem. And it's also one of these things that, you know, as we look to the future, it's a, you know, it's a scary thing because it's not clear how you walk back these things. That is, once these guardrails are smashed, it's not entirely clear to me how you kind of put them back in place, especially when you have this incredibly fractured media environment, places like Drudge Report, Breitbart, which, again, as I said, they kind of aid and abet this degradation of democratic discourse.
But I wonder, though, if the mainstream press and the White House Press Association will have the cojones to do something about the way they're being treated by the White House. And it's obviously, you know, that Sarah Huckabee Sanders and Spicer favor the cheer squad from Breitbart and Drudge and Fox, And they accuse everybody else in the White House press pool of being representative of the fake news. And in fact, one reporter the other day spoke back, and you could see that this Huckabee Sanders simply couldn't handle the idea that somebody was challenging her because she's such a vacuous propagandist. But my sense is that they ought to just abandon the White House and just let Trump just use his own propaganda organs, these volunteer propagandists like Hannity, Drudge, and Breitbart, and be boycotted. I mean, do they have the solidarity to do that, do you think?
I don't know. I mean, it's a very interesting point that you raise, and it is one of these things where you wonder, you know, if you do engage in some kind of boycott, whether that, you certainly run the risk that that kind of blows up in your face, and that what you now have is you have basically a kind of minister of propaganda, and a minister of propaganda who is feeding stories to those who will simply accept them and report them without any kind of critical insight whatsoever. And that, I suppose, has its own dangers. I'm not sure if, you know, if I would welcome that kind of boycott. It's a very interesting question. It's also worth probably mentioning that these media outlets, you know, the mainstream media, which I do believe are performing an extremely valuable check on the president, it's also worth pointing out that good marketing for them as well. You know, they are in a certain way benefiting from the relentless attacks that the president is directing towards them as they become tools of opposition and resistance and gain a lot of popularity in that role.
Well, to some extent, I think they're expiating for the fact that they gave Donald Trump $5 billion worth of free publicity.
Absolutely.
You know, they're reaping the whirlwind. But I think just in closing, though, you have to admit that the Post and the New York Times are doing some pretty good investigative work.
Don't get me wrong. I think that they're doing really kind of a superb job. Mm-hmm. And it is kind of remarkable to see how they have changed their entire kind of repertorial and editorial stance. Sure. That they now kind of configure themselves very much as tools of opposition and resistance. And again, that's a very interesting thing to kind of imagine moving forward, whether, right. You know, these great newspapers can walk back that stance if you now have a very different kind of president inhabiting the White House.
Well, Lawrence Douglas, I thank you very much for joining us here today. And again, I've been speaking with Lawrence Douglas, a professor of law, jurisprudence, and social thought at Amherst College, and he's also a regular columnist for The Guardian. This has been Background Briefing. I'm Ian Masters. I'd like to thank the producer, Jose Benavides, and Clemence Penard. And this program is available for podcasting at ianmasters.com. You also contact me, and I'll be back again on Sunday at 11 a.m. with another Background Briefing. Bye for now.